You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Let's kick off by talking about this study that you're saying is misleading in the way that it presents the relationship between private hospitals and the public system. That study claimed that private treatment cost public hospitals $11.5 million in aftercare. What is your response to this study?
I would be cautious about using the term misleading. I think that the publication provides no context by which those figures are compiled. I haven't seen the data or the research paper itself, so I assume that reference to $11 million is accurate. But in a context point of view, that would be a reasonably modest component of either the private sector's activity levels or, in fact, the DHB's operational levels.
You've noted that there is a lot of cooperation between the private and public systems. Could you outline some of the examples of this in your experience?
Private sector typically doesn't compete with the public sector, and as a result, there is a high level of cooperation and collaboration. A key to that is that a lot of staff, specifically the medical staff, but not limited to, share employers from both a public and a private perspective. So in fact, we see a lot of staff movement in the clinical skills area between the two sectors. And as a consequence, there is a high level of cooperation and collaboration. The public system accesses the private system to allow them greater capacity and the ability to manage their peaks and troughs of much of the work, and certainly the statistics that are provided from the historical review highlights that, and in fact is at the end of 2020, just short of 20,000 public patients were treated in the private sector under DHB arrangements. So look, the collaboration and the cooperation is certainly alive and well between the two sectors.
Why is such a high number of elective surgeries done privately over using the public system?
From a private point of view, I mean, people will seek to have choice or seek to control their health experiences and interactions. That certainly is one of the key drivers of why people may hold insurance for medical or health activities. But I'd be cautious again with that perception. Those that are insured would represent about 30% of the patients that are treated in the private sector. Many people self-fund, and a lot of that will be about having choice, but also timely access to health services. As the public system becomes more burdened with patient volumes and disruption to their operational environments, such as COVID and the likes, then wait times are extended and people's health will be preferred to be managed by the patient themselves. And where people can, they may well choose to go private over public.
So what are some of the ways in which private hospitals try to alleviate the pressure on the public system? What sort of impact does the private sector have on things like waiting lists?
The waiting list statistics or waiting list status of DHBs is no longer as visible as it used to be. Anecdotally, all DHBs suffer significant levels of patients waiting for their surgery or outpatient clinic attendance. The private sector has, from a capacity point of view, as many operating theatres, as many specialists as the public sector does. And as a consequence, from an elective surgery or elective medical procedure point of view, greater than 50% of all activity in New Zealand is undertaken in the private sector. So without the private sector, you would anticipate that that level of volume and burden would fall back onto the public sector. We don't have patients that are just choosing to have procedures done. These are patients that are clinically determined that a procedure is warranted and would benefit their health and well-being. So it's not as if the problem would go away if the private sector went away.
How do you respond to the argument that the private sector favours wealthier social groups? There's been some concern expressed that growth in the private sector could actually be detrimental to the groups that can't afford private insurance?
I believe that while financial burdens or limitations may well be effective for some people, many are covered and are treated within the private sector. If, for example, their care falls under ACC as a consequence, then that is irrespective of someone's financial status. Similarly, people that would not be deemed to be wealthy do make decisions. We are well aware that some people will choose private care and will add that proportion to their home mortgage, or that family members will help fund their child, their grandchild, or their parents or grandparents for treatment in the private sector. So look, I wouldn't target the financial or the wealth limitations to it. It is really about an individual wishing to access health care at a time that they need to access it.
How do we ensure that we maintain a healthy relationship between public and private sectors, where public hospitals can provide care to those who need it, while the private sector can alleviate some of the pressure and take that pressure off of public hospitals?
Look, collaboration is key to it. Open communication is key to it. The Ministry of Health certainly had a key role to play during last year's COVID lockdown situation, and that gave clarity and confidence that the public sector and the private sector can collaborate and work together, share resources, plan together, and that is the secret. The burden of healthcare delivery and the risk of having healthcare rationed within the public system will continue into the future. So to pretend it doesn't exist would be a significant burden. Accepting that it does exist and then collaborating would be a key solution.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.